podcast is just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. I am Wesley Sykes, and through the other side of the ether is the sexy teen superhero to my sexy teen superhero. It's Mr. Nicholas J. S. Fryer, sexy teen superhero for hire. Are you there?
There you go. That was, there you go. I am there. Are you there?
Yeah. I'm just making sure that you glitched up on me there a little bit. So I just want to make sure I wasn't just, you know, you weren't just dumbfounded by what I laid upon you.
I was definitely dumbfounded because you're glitching on my end too, so I have no idea who's the glitchy one right now. I'm going to check on Twitter real quick. No, we're not on Twitter. So there you go.
There we go. That's my mistake there. But nevertheless, screw the Twitter people. You know, they're not here. You know, we don't put up polls anymore, you know, so it's forget them. Mm. But nevertheless, we are also forgetting hashtag spooky season because it's come and gone. And we usher in hashtag holiday season the only way we know how, with an exit survey of the latest superhero show, Gen V, now streaming on Amazon Prime. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, it's perfect. This is definitely a good holiday season show for everybody. If you haven't watched it, go and make some time for it now if you want to feel nice, warm, and cozy.
Yeah, spreading some holiday cheer this time of the year. It's always important. But before that, Nick, of course, we're talking about Gen V today. So in honor of that, a little intro question here. Andre had a little bit of a tough time coming up with a name for Maria Moreau. Good superhero name there. Do you have a good superhero name for Maria Moreau?
Yes. I think I do at least. Transfusion.
Transfusion. Would be, interesting.
Would be my first suggestion. I did have a second one that I meant. Oh, no. I had Crimson, but I couldn't think of anything to like add to that because you can't just do Crimson. But Transfusion would be like
unless you're the Harvard University Athletics Department, then you can just be the Crimson.
That's very true. That's a good point. And I feel like you'd run into like a lawsuit issue if you went and decided to go that route. But Transfusion, you kind of know what you're talking about once you know what her powers are. But until then, it's like, is it blood related or is it just why is it transfusion? So it's like not too on the nose, but at the same time, it is telling you what's going on.
How about Hemogoblin?
Hemogoblin. I feel like if you want to make her a villain, yes.
Well, yeah, you know, it's kind of a messy superpower here, so I'm not sure if she should have like an elegant name. She's very elegant, but you know, I'm not sure if her powers are, you know. So that's true. If you want to go elegant, how about Clitoris?
I
like a blood clot, but she's female.
Okay. I actually didn't catch that. That I would think. I gotta be honest, I think I like mine more than both of yours.
I think Clitoris is pretty good.
Okay, there you go.
It's tough to pinpoint sometimes, you know, but I think I really nailed it down there. Hemorrhage. Like a hemorrhage.
I'll tell you what.
Hemorrhage. She's going nuts.
I think hemorrhage, especially like if this was in the 90s, like creating characters in the 90s, I think that would actually play perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let me see. Any other good blood ventricle system? No, I'm trying to think of some other things. Arteries.
It's got something to do with vein.
Artemis? Vein? Oh, vein. Yeah, there we go. We could do something with vein.
Or just vein, like Bane.
No, yeah. We're working. We're right around it, though. Either way, we got a couple of good options here, which I like.
The goblin one, if she's a villain, I'm all in on that one. I just want that to be clear.
Well, and she might be, and of course, we'll get into this when we get into our exit survey here, but, you know, there's no real heroes there, although she might be the closest.
Yeah, she's definitely the closest one to, I would, I mean, I would say she is. And obviously, and a reminder for everybody, too, anybody who's new to the show, we are going to get into spoilers. There's a lot to get into here. But this is a show where it's like there's a lot of twists along the way where I feel like sometimes we talk about shit and it's just whatever. You hear us talk about it beforehand. If you don't mind spoilers, you'll be fine. This would kind of ruin your viewing experience, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. A little bit of a whodunit, bit of a mystery. Mystery here. What is not a mystery is trending now.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this in Variety all over the internet. It's been making the rounds. This, it seems like it's a popular topic right now to or it seems like the established media finally gotten the okay to go after Marvel and not be so nice to him now, because Marvel's getting dragged yet again. There's a Hollywood Reporter article a few weeks ago that we discussed. Now there is this long-form Variety article who Tatiana Siegel or something like that. I forget. First name's Tatiana is the author of it here. Made all the waves probably shortly after we released the episode here. But Marvel, kind of the whole story runs the gamut, Nick. It's Kevin Feige getting stretched too thin. Visual effects workers getting stretched too thin. COVID, you know, ruining everything. So it's a big kind of like retrospective on a lot of stuff here. Problems with She-Hulk, you know, anticipation of the Marvels testing low and their big budget and all the pushbacks that they had. You know, things with what else am I missing here? Jonathan Majors was a big one there, but whether they casted him too soon, and the rumor is that they chose Kang as the Thanos level threat only after the popularity of him in the Loki series. So that, you know, maybe that shows like a lack of vision down the road there, and they're just kind of flying by the seat of their pants. You know, there's stuff with not Jonathan, Mahershala Ali and Blade about having, you know, a bunch of different rewrites. One where, you know, he was relegated to a fourth billing or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and he was almost threatening to walk off the movie as a whole there. Right. And that's been, you know, that was announced how many Comic-Cons ago. Right. That I feel like that was like 2, 3, 4 Comic-Cons ago at this point. But so there's a lot of stuff in there. I just threw on you, Nick. But what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you say that the Variety, Hollywood Reporter, they've all gotten the okay to go after Marvel at this point. When I hear that Kevin Feige's being spread too thin, something tells me that he's got to know that this report was coming out too. Like, he, not just that, like, because I'm sure he gets these, you know, someone like him gets a heads up that this kind of thing happens. We see it.
Sure.
Like,
oh yeah, he's got
movies. More. Yeah, like that, exactly. That these big heads find out somehow. Sometimes they get an opportunity to comment on these things. I gotta think though in this instance that not only did he know it was coming and get the heads up, like he could have had a part in this report coming out if he's getting mentioned about being spread too thin at this point. In some ways, this report is frustrating because there are certain things where it's like the Blade thing. I don't understand how that happens. I don't understand how you take Blade, who I've said it before on here, Blade kind of started all of this. Like Blade ushered in Marvel and to the big screen, like again, after it kind of had a rough, you know, time previous to that.
And brother from another mother for me, you know, Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes. And then we get, you know, Fantastic Four, we get X-Men, we get Spider-Man, and then things kind of take off like a rocket ship from there. By the time we get to, oh wait, with Batman and Iron Man. So yeah, I don't know how you go and disrespect the character like that. And it just seems like some really poor decision-making, but I'm like frustrated with some of that. I'm glad some of this got out, 'cause again, the graphic designer stuff, those people don't deserve to continue to get overworked. But then the Iron Man thing that's getting kind of thrown in the mix. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the one, like Iron Man. And I think you said Chris Evans. I remember seeing Black Widow get mentioned as well, Natasha.
Yeah.
I mean, Natasha.
Natasha Romanoff.
No, but why am I blanking on
Scarlett Johansson?
Scarlett Johansson. Yeah, jeez, yeah. I'm calling her Natasha. Like, that's a real name. Scarlett Johansson. The idea that these people are getting brought back in and this is a Hail Mary. Hey, maybe that's the case. But also, like, that's within the wheelhouse of doing comic book stories. Like, so I like to make that part of this.
Well, I agree to a sense. I think to reboot the characters is within the realm of the comics. But to bring back the actors is a sign of desperation. That's where I kind of make the split there.
Yeah, the only problem is like if you bring him in, like in comics, you bring him back in, and it's just like the character never left. Like obviously, it's very dependent on the writer, and obviously, the artist is going to give them somewhat of a different look because of their styles. But like ideally, that's the same person coming back. Here, if you go and like bring that this universe's Iron Man back, this Tony Stark back, and it's somebody who's not, you know, Robert Downey Jr. Unless you like wanted to make him super young somehow, I don't know how you justify that. It just wouldn't go over that well, right?
You could pull him from a different universe, the different Iron Man from a different multiverse. You know, I think that's easy enough to do.
Then that's fine.
They're out for everything, you know. We're out of ideas. Okay, it's the multiverse. We can do whatever we want. You know, that feels like the out clause for them in a lot of ways. An idea like, oh, we don't really have to explain it. It's just the multiverse.
I staunchly disagree that if you brought back Iron Man and you could have brought Robert Downey Jr. back and you bring someone else back, it's not going to go over well. Like that person has to knock it out of the park.
I agree. I think, but what I'm saying is this is a big desperate move for them.
I don't think so. It's within the realm of, you know what?
It's not in the realm of comic books. It's in the realm of reality that they're dealing with right now, and that there's all this damage control of these like major articles coming out. Like I said, the tide appears to be turning, that people are losing interest in this current, you know, slate of MCU superhero movies. So they're going back to the well to bring back the guys who were more popular. I mean, that doesn't sound like desperate to you?
In some ways it does, but in the same time, Marvel's done so much good that again, and also like, I get that everybody else has largely had a lot of issues with this phase of things. And the whole thing with Jonathan Majors, and that's when they decided to do it. I don't necessarily love that, but there's still a lot of stuff from this era of Marvel that I like. So I'm not as like, oh, desperation. Okay. Like you're bringing back stuff that worked.
And I think you're more, you know, lenient than most are. Maybe more forgiving, but I think you would even have to say that this current stretch, the fourth and fifth phases, you know, haven't been anything close to one, two, or three, right?
I think that what three was and what two was, like what it was for. Okay, comparing four to two and three, while I get that you can't just go and revert back to one, I do think that this is a period of reset and there has to be there's adjustments that are going to be made. The way everybody views one now, it does not like it was not viewed in that same way that it is today.
So if there's a reset right now that they're going through and then they quit on the reset and go back to what was working, that's not a desperate move.
It's not if they quit what they're doing right now. But
which is already a reset, and they realize what they're doing is not working for the audience, and they go back to what was working. Isn't that kind of a desperate move? I don't know. I'm just wondering.
No. That's a fair question. I'm just trying to process what you're asking. So I think in some ways that's a fair point, but also it depends on what level are they going to bring Iron Man back. Is he going to be the straw that stirs the drink again, or do they want to just have him back in the mix? Same thing with Captain America, same thing with Scarlett Johansson. If they're more complimentary, then it's not as big of a deal. And they could still go and do some of the stuff that they were trying to do. We don't know at this stage. So
I think even announcing that they're coming back is a desperate move. Kind of like how they introduced the X-Men and Fantastic Four, again, two or three Comic-Cons ago, as almost like a bait and be like, oh, hopefully that keeps them on the hook long enough to get through whatever we're going through, so that we can, you know, we get more of our tentpole characters.
The X-Men Fantastic Four stuff is kind of is undebatable. Like, I just don't. I get that we have. I saw reports that it looks like we may see like allusions to the X-Men in this Marvel's movie, which is cool. And I get that Deadpool is going to be big and whatnot, and maybe that's where it's a jumping off point or whatever. But it is still like, I'm surprised like that they've taken this long. Like, again, my thing that where I look at this phase of stuff and get frustrated or kind of scratch my head is, you went in the first three phases and you use characters that people kind of know, but they don't They were never really beloved in the comics because their comics were never had these. Most of them didn't have these crazy great runs. Mm-hmm. You went and made a lot of money off of them. You try to do it again, but with characters who are not quite as known. I think that is where they got greedy with stuff. I don't think that they necessarily did bad stories, but you had characters that were tougher.
It's a little bit of both, yeah.
To get invested in from the jump. If you'd done it for a little bit and then pivoted into X-Men and Fantastic Four and then kind of sprinkled in these other characters, it probably would have been a lot easier.
Yeah, it could have been. Nevertheless, you know, Marvel, I think some of this is their own doing. We talk about, like, we're big Patriot fans here in the Massachusetts area. Oh, you're not a Patriots fan?
No.
Never?
I used to be. I'm not anymore. No.
You don't have any fanhood in the sports team? You're not a Celtics fan anymore?
I would say the team that I have closest, the only team that I kind of have fandom for still is somehow the Celtics, and that's probably the team I have that closest to. Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah,
that's a conversation for another day.
Nevertheless, a lot of Patriot fans, you excluded apparently, mm-hmm. are wondering about Bill Belichick and who's to blame for the current state of the Patriots right now. And it's easy to blame, Bill Belichick because he's the one at the top of the totem pole there, and rightfully so, but you would be remiss to blame it all on him. It's a breakdown of multitude levels. It starts at the top and it comes down. It branches out.
It's funny. I actually did think about this comparison over the weekend at some point, just because, like, anytime you go on Twitter when a Patriots game is playing, like, how can you not see, like, all everybody chirping and chiming in about all the madness that's going on? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does feel very eerily similar. I completely agree.
Well, if you didn't have enough of this Marvel talk, we got more for you right now.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
We got the series season 2 finale of Loki coming up. So I think you'll be all caught up by the time we're ready to review either your next week, depending on how we want to lay things out there. But we did get the Echo trailer, which is coming out, I want to say early January, maybe January 11th, comes to mind here. But it's going to be whole season release. I want to say it's 5 episodes. The trailer, they cut a good trailer. I tell you, I had zero interest of this coming in. This might have been one of the first shows that I actually skipped. I'll give it a watch. It seemed kind of interesting. They said it's going to be Marvel's first look at a villain.
Mm-hmm. I love.
Yes, which is intriguing.
Yeah, and the other thing that got announced with this too is that I don't know if they're going to debut it with Echo or if it's like a thing that's to come, but they're going to start doing like Marvel Spotlight, which is
I saw that. Yeah, yeah. What is that?
It's going to be more focused on like street level characters in the Marvel universe, which honestly, I don't need that, but I think the majority of Marvel fans, like people who watch Marvel shit now, need that kind of stuff because everything is all about, no disrespect here, but the connective tissue. You're not alone in that. A lot of people care about that. But now if you go and say this is kind of its own thing, it's street level stuff, like they do care about the larger things, but you can't, they kind of have to worry about other stuff too. That's what this is doing.
Is it a one-off or is it going to be a series?
I think the Marvel Spotlight is like an umbrella that it's under.
Oh, okay. I got you. Cause I was envisioning it kind of like, you know, on Disney Plus, they have those Marvel, I think it's called Marvel Legends.
Yes.
And they give you like a little bit of a background on the character coming, either before a series or a movie or something.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not that, I was picturing it kind of like that. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I think it's like a subset of Marvel, like that's coming.
Gotcha.
Now.
Gotcha. So, yeah, so it would something that would live on Disney Plus, but like, so that's where what the Daredevil Born Again is going to be, something like that.
Yeah, okay. I would think that would be there, and I would think She-Hulk would fall under that umbrella. I don't know if, I mean, Moon Knight should, but I don't know, with all the God stuff that they had in there, they may have a tough time.
Yeah, it's not really. That. Yeah, that's not really street level. And when you get to that, when you're talking about Anubis, yeah,
yeah. But he definitely should fall under that. But the way they started things, I don't know. But yeah, so there's those. And then obviously the Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, all those characters. So Jessica Jones could not.
I'll tell you what, I love the look of Kingpin. Kingpin looked great. I thought he looked big and intimidating, more so than what he did in his appearance during Hawkeye. So I thought he looked a little bigger there. But yeah, so this seems like an interesting stuff. And again, they cut in a really good trailer. So you'll get me to turn it on.
It was a good tone setter. I mean, and to bring up Kingpin too, like not only did he look good, but like that whole scene, like it, things got pretty gruesome there, especially for a trailer. If they don't, yeah, I mean, I would hope that for the show it might get a little bit more gruesome, but it probably won't. But that was well done. And I'm curious, like they set a tone of like, this is going to be, I mean, it's set a pretty dark tone. I mean, you also have the whole thing where Echo is deaf, and it seems like they're going to like feature that in the course of the story. So I'm curious how that's going to be thrown in the mix as well. So I was looking forward to seeing how this was going to go.
She's got one leg.
Yes. And a character that I don't know a whole lot about, but that was a good, really good trailer. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. And if you looked close enough, maybe you got a little Daredevil cameo in there too. Looks like he might show up again too. So
yes.
We'll keep an eye out for that here.
Mm-hmm. Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Marvel's comes out this week everywhere. We were talking about it a little bit when we're discussing the Variety article there, but it's got a $250 million budget. Obviously, it's been mired with delays and some reshoots here. So it's finally getting released, and it's tracking to pull in like something like $80 million, I think, in this first week. I think as a crow flies, as we're recording right now, we're supposed to be getting another trailer, I don't know, either tonight or tomorrow, the final trailer for it, which I think is supposed to give a little bit more of a hint to the supposed cameos or tie-ins to previous titles that might draw you in a little bit more. So we'll see if that helps pre-sale tickets at all. But, you know, I'm sure we're going to be seeing it either this weekend or next weekend. So we're going to see it regardless. But any thoughts, any hopes, any dreams for this movie coming out?
So we're doing Loki and then we're doing this. That's my first question, too. Right?
Either way, I mean, we can kind of do a dealer's choice, whatever's easier for you, depending on what's going on in the week. But
OK, either way. I am planning on seeing it this weekend, but yeah, my biggest thing is just as long as this is as fun as like the first trailer made me think this was going to be, because I really like, again, another trailer that they did a really good job. And Marvel obviously has shown that they can, like you say, cut a good trailer, but at the same time, like there's been plenty of times where I don't feel the need to see it other than for talking about it on the show. I'm going to watch it anyways, but I was curious, okay, what are we going to do with the Marvels here? And looks like it's going to be a good time. So again, the numbers not ideal, but I'm just more focused on having a good time watching this.
Yeah, I think the trailers they've also done a good job of cutting trailers here. So I think when you've had the Intergalactic Beastie Boys trailer, I think the most recent one, I don't know the song that's in there, but that was also a pretty good trailer. It's an interesting concept, kind of having like a Freaky Friday type of vibe, but the director, Nia DaCosta, she was also mentioned in this Variety story, too. She caught some flack for leaving set during post-production or something, which other people have come out and said that's a fairly normal occurrence when you get like scheduling conflicts, especially when they've been pushbacks and all this type of stuff. But I don't know enough one way or the other. But I've seen both sides of the argument that, you know, what Variety presented of her leaving early, and then other people pushing back on that, saying, hey, that's kind of, I think they said James Gunn did that too for one of the Guardians movies.
It's some of this. I saw a tweet like right before the show, or right as like we were getting going, that she said that she kind of like, they knew what the direction, like where everything was kind of going already. So that kind of also made things easier for her to be able to step away in that capacity. But it's like, the on the one hand, I hear you on like where we're talking about like Variety and all these other like bigger names are like now getting the okay to go after Marvel, but what I'm like getting annoyed with is like, that's a thing that happens in the industry. People are coming out and saying that if you're reporting on that stuff, then shouldn't you maybe mention that in the article? Like it doesn't feel like it's just okay to go after Marvel. It's like it's encouraged to go after them, because that's what everybody wants.
And you know you're going to get clicks out of it, right?
Exactly.
Before it might have been like, oh, why are you doing this sort of thing? Don't pay attention to it. I think now it's kind of getting the attention there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I gotta be honest, I'm so not here for it. It's getting very tiresome.
It does. Yeah. So it's a bit of like Star Wars in a lot of ways. You know, when you build up the fandom that, they're going to get a wide swath of opinions and desires of the direction that you want to go in there. Right. So you're perpetually not pleasing everyone.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But I will say, like, this is where it's tough, because there's a lot of stuff that's frustrating in all this. that like it's like that feels like the reporting seems a little irresponsible. But the Blade stuff, that's not great. The and obviously like, again, to like the graphic designers keep like shining a light on that situation. I think that's important too. So it's kind of like, I guess, a catch 22 because
I think overall these types of stories are net positive. If from the fact if you're hoping for better content or better storytelling or better products, however you want to word it, this hopefully lights a fire and gets the attention of everybody. Say, hey, we need to do better. We need to clean this up or whatever the case is. Right. So that's like the glass half full approach that, all right, you take your lumps here, you learn your lessons, you get up to at bat, make the adjustments, and then get on base. There we go. How's that for a baseball reference?
Look at you. Wow. Unbelievable. Billy Dean over here.
Just in time for the comic book minute.
Ah, a superb choice.
So this really got a start of a new Punisher run, but it's not Frank Castle. He's actually in hell at the moment. I don't know if I'm going to be checking this one out. I forget who the name was of the character, but not someone I'm familiar with, not something that I'm particularly interested in. But I did want to put that out there for everybody. From Skybound, who, of course, prints through Image, we have Transformers issue 2. I am not a Transformers guy. I don't know if I saw all the Michael Bay movies, but I enjoyed those, but like they're not big ones for me. But I really enjoyed the first issue of Transformers, so I will be reading the second one. From Image, we got The Dead Lucky issue 10 and Midlife or How to Hero at 50 issue 2, which I really liked the first issue, but the second one was even better. Then from AWA Studios, we got The Madness issue 4, which is a title that Doc is reading. Speaking of Doc, on TLDR this week, we'll be doing our November solicit a little late, but we needed to end the month of October on the right note and continue out the spooky season like we did here on Change My Mind.
All right, I love it here. Let's get over to the main segment now. What do you say, Green Ranger?
All right, now let's go get him.
Awesome. I forgot his name. I couldn't come up with Tommy in that moment there. I had a brain fart. But nevertheless, Gen V, streaming on Amazon Prime. Why don't you hit us with the synopsis, Nick?
From the world of The Boys comes Gen V, which explores the first generation of superheroes to know that their superpowers are from Compound V. These heroes are put to their physical and moral boundaries to the test, competing for the school's top ranking.
I copy and pasted that right from IMDb.
No, weird. I messed up.
The wording of it sounds weird as I'm reading through it.
These heroes put their physical and moral boundaries to the test, competing for the school's top ranking.
I got you. Okay, I see.
It did sound weird. I fucked up, though.
Yeah, all right. Well, hey, it happens to the best of us. Probably going to happen to me on the cast and crew right now. Because this was created by Evan Goldberg, Eric Kripke, and Craig Rosenberg. There we go. There. And also, based on, is this an actual comic book series, Gen V?
Gen V is not a comic book series. This is based on a specific arc within The Boys, which I will touch on like towards the end of our exit survey.
Okay, I like that. That's a big market tease here. This is starring Jazz Sinclair as Marie Monroe or the Hemoglobin Goblin. I said the actual term. see, I'm screwing up left and right here. We're doing it. Chance Perdomo as Andre. Lizzie Broadway as Emma Meyer. Maddie Phillips as Kate Dunlap. London Thor and Derek Liu as Jordan Lee. Asa Germain as Sam Reardon. Shelley Kahn as Indira Shetty. Alexander Calvert as Rufus. And Patrick Schwarzenegger as Golden Boy. Oh, that was the top cast. We probably could have went a little deeper in that. There's a lot of reoccurring side characters in this.
Yeah, but you got the important ones there. I said before, what was the third name that you
Lizzie Broadway
that I said would be fit for this if it was the 90s?
Hemorrhage.
For Marie Monroe, I apologize. Hemorrhage. Yes. The Clitoris one, like if this was The Boys, that would be in The Boys. Yeah, like there's one character who we don't see here, but he's in he's around this run. His name's Blarney Cock. Like there's a lot of outrageous names. So,
and is he Irish?
Yes.
Can you make a wish? Do you make a wish on his cock? Is that what you do?
I forget what his power is. He actually Huey actually kills him. pretty early in the story.
Right.
I forget what his power is. Anyways, enough about him. So box office and critic reception. This show, obviously we don't have box office for shows, but for the rating on this show, we got a 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb, and then a 97-76 split on Rotten Tomatoes with 3.2 out of 5 on Google reviews. I can't read today. And 78% of Google users liking this movie.
So, yeah, so kind of runs the gamut there between just being meh and really good to like near perfect.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's you know, this is one of those things where it's the critics really like it, but then the audience necessarily does it. And I hate being on the side of the critics, but I am in this instance, which I'll go into our score and tweet length review if you don't mind.
Yeah, please take it away.
Get through this one. so I give this, obviously we do our scoring out of 100. I gave this a 92 out of 100. I think this is a mandatory watch for any fan of The Boys, not just from an entertainment standpoint, but it seems like from a larger story standpoint. It has great social commentary, which is what you typically get in The Boys. And there are quite a few awesome twists and some fascinating characters in this story.
Yeah, I liked it. I'm not as high on it as you. I give it an 81 out of 100. Enjoyable spinoff series that adds to the greater Boys universe, as Nick just mentioned. Sometimes it was lacking subtlety and humor, I think, in its story or writing. It deals with some heavier ideas that maybe don't offer the space for humor all the time. But Gen V has most of the look and feel of The Boys, particularly when it comes to his gruesome death and having no real heroes in it. So, pretty good, enjoyable series overall.
Yeah, and I think that the having no real heroes is something that I really enjoy. Like, in general, I like that because it really blurs the line. It's like you don't know who to root for other than pretty much Marie throughout this entire story. You have no idea who to root for.
Yeah, it's interesting because Marie kind of feels like the audience's avatar in a lot of ways, right? Like, she has real background or knowledge of this school or like the inner workings or everything like that. So she's finding out everything for the first time, kind of like we are. So I think she's the main character. So obviously you're kind of thinking that she's the good person, but I found myself rooting for the humans too at a certain part.
So that's fair. I mean, that's very much fair. And I mean,
everyone's bad.
Yeah. Everyone's bad. And then also to your point of like her power being like, it is kind of tough to take in. I think it's badass power, but at first it's like, oh fuck. I think that like, that also is an interesting twist where this is the audience's avatar, but then at the same time, like, she's got this bizarre power that I would think for most people would say it in the show. They say it in the show. Yeah, you have a power that like most people don't like or wouldn't be able to get behind.
Yeah, it's where the evolution turned me around. I wasn't behind it for a while there, but we'll get into that. Do you have a favorite episode of the season? 8 episodes, about 45 minutes a pop or so.
Yeah, a few sub 40 minute episodes in there, which I did like. I mean, and you and I both binged this also. We talked about this, you know, early on that we were going to end up doing this.
Mostly in the last 24 hours for me.
I want to say, like, if you haven't watched this, and again, obviously, we're going to get into spoilers. We do that on this show, obviously. But if this is definitely a show that's better for week to week. I know the first three episodes you pointed out before we were recording that the first three episodes were all released together. Fine, whatever. But these episodes are a lot to take in. There's a lot of detail. There really isn't any fat on this. Everything matters from episode to episode. And for me, I have to go with the finale on this one. There's a lot of
really good finale. Yeah.
It's a lot of good stuff elsewhere. And I know you'll get into it, but I thought 8 was a great ending.
It was a great ending. You got nice cameos there. You got nice action in there. A little bit of resolution leaves you on a cliffhanger. It avoids so much of what the Marvel issue has been with their TV shows of landing the plane. I think it does a good job of landing the plane, but also setting things up for down the road there. But I think you look at, you know, 6, 7, and 8, Jumanji, Sick, and the Guardians of the Gadolkin. I think those are all just great, great episodes. Great, again, great landing, great runway, all that stuff. Episode 1 really stands out to me too, as kind of reeling you in, doing a good job of it, because again, like I said, we just binged this. I was interested into it. It's kind of my take on The Boys, before I watch it, I never like, oh, I can't wait to watch The Boys. But when I watch it, I'm hooked in. And that was kind of my thought with Gen V. I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe I'll watch it. Maybe I won't, or, you know, if for the show sort of thing. And then I'm like, all right, yeah, like I'll watch it. And then I'm into it. Once it gets going, it gets me hooked. So it's kind of like The Boys in that sense for me.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I mean, I The Boys is an awesome comic book series and everything too, but it's just like, there's a lot. Like, it's a heavy show. The Boys is a heavy show, and this is even heavier. It's interesting how we both have a similar feeling towards that.
But yeah, episode 1 and 8, those probably stand out to me. What was the best superhero kill or death in here? You got a couple of good notes on it, but again, living up to The Boys as far as setting the bar for gruesome deaths and innovative deaths and stuff like that. Favorite superhero kill.
So it turns out, just a couple of facts that I ended up finding on Fandom. This is really cool that they had this available, something that we may want to look into in the future whenever we're
pretty
talking
quickly
superhero
too,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah. 46 total deaths in the show. Although they say 48.
I'm surprised. That feels low. I'm sorry to keep cutting you off. 46 feels low.
Yeah, it does feel a little low. And they list 48 on the actual site, but they count the Shetty family deaths that happened on the plane, which obviously happened previously on The Boys. Mm-hmm. But Sam led the charge with 19 kills. And then, believe it or not, Kate and Marie were both tied with 4 kills at number 2. Did you think Marie had more kills than 4?
Yeah, so it's her parents.
Yep.
And then she pops a head off, right? Yeah, and she crushes a heart. No, she crushes a heart.
In episode, she has 2 kills in the first episode and 2 kills in the last episode. That's it. Huh? Crazy, right?
Yeah.
I was blown away by that. Again, assuming that Fandom has it all right, Wes and I did binge it all, and I didn't keep notes on this, but it felt right. They broke down. I mean, again, 46 kills is as much as it feels like. It's still pretty much on average 6 kills per episode.
That's a good point. That's a good point there. Yeah. All right. I like that there, but you could pretty much take any one of Sam's kills, right? I think he was the real marksman of this show.
Yeah. The puppet kills were in particular my favorite, just cause it was such an outrageous thing. And they teased it like at one point where you saw, what was it, a deep puppet version kind of, or it's like Sesame Street Muppets kind of looking guy. Mm-hmm. That was so bizarre, but I had so much fun with it. And then at the end, it's just like this total carnage at the end. The randomness of Soldier Boy's death was kind of funny, cause I get that it's a thing you see happen all the time where he's about to give you an important bit of information, then he dies. But it's also like, he's a character that didn't necessarily need to die because he's a memory. But that was fun in the moment. And then Marie's blood spikes was awesome. And then my last one was Victoria Newman doing her thing to the doctor, her one kill in this show.
Yeah, and that was a great connection there that I really liked. And that's when I started to turn on Maria's power set a little bit more there. When it got a little more nuanced, aside from her just cutting herself every time. That's a bit brutal there. But once she was able to kind of realize that she can, like, hear blood or see blood, like, that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, that was awesome. Awesome twist on it. I was curious. Did you ever think, like, who could be her benefactor and all this once that got mentioned? I feel like it was episode 6 or 5 that came up.
No, I might have missed that. Missed that part, because at certain points, you know, I got the baby with me. I'm watching football. I got a bunch of things going on yesterday. So I was kind of like in and out as it was on there. So I might have missed some minor details like that. But that's interesting. You know, when I never thought about it until they finally meet after their, like, town hall meeting or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I thought that was interesting. My favorite death was Emma, Ant Girl there, going through the guard's ears to save Sam.
Yeah.
That one hits home to me because I have this distinct memory. I couldn't tell you which Nightmare on Elm Street it is, but I caught one scene of, I think he was a deaf guy, but Freddy Krueger sticking a Q-tip through this guy's head through one ear and coming out the other and killing him. And I always had inner ear problems as a kid. So that, like, just freaked me out to this day, you know, and just see that there, that was a nice full circle moment for me there. So that was kind of cool.
Okay. Yeah.
But you mentioned the blood spikes of Maria kills. Marie killing her family. That like was very, just very off-putting, very sad scene in general. But again, talk about setting the tone right from the jump. I mean, you're kind of like, holy shit, this is what's happening here.
Yeah, it was an amazing tone setter. Absolutely. Like the accident with her mom, but then not only that, it just gets amplified infinitely by what she does when her dad comes in the room.
Yeah. And Andre killing that girl at the nightclub. I wasn't really seeing that coming. When he's like, he's like trying to throw the metal into some guy's drink to impress a girl, and he gets bumped and then just like cuts some girl's throat, bleeds out in the middle of the nightclub. Again, kind of like an unsuspecting kind of thing. He's probably the one closest to Marie as the most good hero.
Yeah, he just didn't
really know which direction to go. He's kind of sitting on the fence the whole time.
That's what kind of annoyed me about him. Like he did a good job at what he was supposed to do, but I also he pissed me off a lot.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I mean, as far as like he had the moral conscience there that I think other people lacked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, yes, yeah, he did. But then, like you said, no one was like where he also loses like his hero cred is like he had his buddy who he was like we thought it was just he just started seeing Kate. After he passed, he's been doing it for a while. So
no, hoes over bros. You can't respect that. No, that for sure. Also, you talked about we talked about the squeezing the girl's heart. Marie doing that earlier during in episode 8. There, I was waiting for her to pull her heart out like Mortal Kombat style. Were you expecting that?
No, but I like the idea a lot, and I would love to see it.
Didn't you do? I kept waiting for it. I was like, no, and she just squeezed it, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of. And then you just hear the girl in the back, like, oh, my heart, and it's like, all right, show it, give it to me.
That would be awesome. Maybe she'll do it at some point. I mean, she's clearly learned some shit. That's for sure.
Yeah, I do like this is honorable mention. This doesn't really make the list because any of Sam's death, particularly like episode 8, stands out to me. I just watched it before. Maybe like an hour or two before we started recording here, but when he goes, they're going to free all the locked up superheroes, and he just takes his hand into a guard's head,
yeah,
and just like crushes his brains and pulls it out, and you can see like the brain matter on his hands, pretty gross. But social media Jeff, who's a funny kind of character,
yeah, that was a good one.
But he blows up the prisoner's head. I thought that was a pretty cool moment. Just turning up the sound and then just like popping it into the superhero's head there. I thought that was like, you know, scored one for the humans there, you know?
Yeah, promptly has the same thing done to him.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He does reap what he sows there.
Yes.
What do you think will age the best from this show?
I think, okay, so we talked about the Marie Victoria Newman tie that we learn about. I think she like in a fleeting moment crossed my mind as like a potential benefactor for Marie when that got brought up, because I was like, who could this possibly be? But then obviously when we see like obviously Victoria Newman is like the greatest secret in this show at this point. And it's like I forget if anybody beyond now Marie knows that she's a soup, because obviously she's taken out a few people here and there along the way. I forget if Homelander knows, but I think it's an awesome secret, and now she's the only other person that knows. So that is the thing I'm most excited about. Well, the way this whole show wraps up is awesome, but I think that's like the side plot that I'm most excited about coming out of the first season of this show. And then on top of that, I just think Marie and Kate are both awesome characters. I Marie in general, I think her power, yes, at first it's like, oh boy, like this is such a boy's boy's character for sure, but then as it went along, I was like, no, this is a lot more badass than I first gave it credit for. And then Kate is like, her power obviously is very impactful in general, and I just think the way that what is this actress's name here who plays Kate, Maddie Phillips, I think she just does an outstanding job of like where we see Andre going back and forth and kind of waffling, we see it with Maddie, but a little bit more harshly. And I think she did an even better job at that. And it just also her look when her eyes like
what's it called, pushing? Is that what she does? Is that like what they use to describe it? I feel like there's like
I forget. Push
too much. I think that's what they said. But
they push too much. Yeah, but when her eyes get like that, whew, Man, that is.
And she didn't necessarily have the deaths that maybe were as memorable, but like she tells one guard to eat their hand and like bat someone in their balls like every hour on the hour.
And yell Jumanji. You know,
yeah. So she has some like creative uses of that type of telepathy, which we haven't really seen. We've seen telepathy, I think, a lot in superhero movies. But again, a little bit of innovation on the side of the boys there. Mm-hmm. So this was a minor thing. It had to be in the first few minutes of episode one. The promotional video for the school, God You, I thought was just so funny and cheesy and corny. And it's like, it's so great because it's like, they're showing their diversity and it's just one guy in a wheelchair at the end. He's like, and I'm super disabled, you know, or super abled or whatever. It's like, you could tell they're just trying to check off all the boxes. I think it's very funny. You talk about social commentary earlier. Yeah. There are some like little subtle jokes in there as well. The NC-17 Harry Potter Hunger Games vibe of the show. I'm here for it. I really liked it, especially in the beginning. This is something I wish they did more of or spent a little bit more time of, but the superhero games, thought that was really cool. Would have liked to see a little bit more of that. Mm. But I thought that was really interesting. The college vibe feels accurate to an extent. This is one of the things that will age the worst for me, but the overuse of the word fuck, it's like they're just like first being allowed to swear for the first time and like everyone's just saying it. And like even the redheaded director of Vought who makes a cameo at the end of the season there, she comes in, it's just saying F this, F that, F this. And it's just like, all right, we get it. You're a raunchy show. You know, it just feels like it felt a little forced. It feels like people who don't swear when they swear. Like some people don't swear good. And this one, you could just tell that they were like trying to swear to get the moment going, you know? It's like, no, I'm really mad. I'm really effing mad. This whole situation is effed, man. F you. And it's like, all right. But that's probably it. Yeah, that's again college vibe. Like it feels accurate. Like, yeah, you're just be
that's my
swearing
thing,
all the time. But
yeah,
it's like, all right, we get it. You're in college, you're away from your parents, cool.
You know what I will say though? You're right. There are some people in this world who don't swear well.
No, it's mostly all of them. Yeah. What do you think will anything else from what will age the best here, or can we move on to the next one?
I think those are like my two biggest things, but you did have a note about like the boys universe, like expanding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do think that like, that's something, you know, I'm sure they're learning from what's gone on with Marvel and DC. Cause there is a lot of stuff, you know, we'll get into that more later. I like what they did here, but also I don't want this to be like licensed to just go bananas.
Keep expanding. No, I agree to an extent for sure. So what will age the worst? So you got a couple things there. I'll let you go first because I got a long list of things that bothered me here.
Yeah, I really didn't have a lot. My only real big thing is, and this is kind of just the nature of the way things go, but like what will age the worst? I think you raise a fair point when it comes to the college stuff. Like they did do it right, but like just naturally in time, like college vibes are going to change. Like this is, as much as this feels accurate, it feels like some of what we experienced, but it also feels very different too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's going to change again, like when, you know, in the next, if this is still around in the next 20 years or whatever. Mm-hmm, but the biggest thing for me that, again, is just a natural thing, is the twist that we get in this show, because there are a lot of them. They're very well done. They are like, they are surprising along the way for me. All of them caught me like, yeah, I think most of them caught me off guard. I think the Shetty stuff was not as surprising, just given the nature of her position, but like the Kate stuff really surprised me, and some of the other things with her friends.
Maybe I missed this, but I thought her relationship with Kate was kind of weird. How it was kind of motherly, and then like she kind of turned on him at the end. Like at the end, when Kate invites everyone to come to Shetty's house and then she ends up killing her, I thought that was, maybe it still is, I thought that was part of this, some plan.
That one definitely,
maybe the plan was to kill her. I don't know.
Of all her plan was to do something to Shetty. She was turning on Shetty. If there was anything that like, if there's stuff I took points off for, that may have been one of the things, because
like they have this moment, right, where they're like holding hands and she's like, I know you are telling the truth, and that she really did like care for her and stuff. And then maybe I missed something, or they just cut away to like Kate doing going off.
I don't think you missed anything, because I felt like as that scene was happening, and maybe that's what they, but at the same time, they probably wanted us to feel that way. Like, is she going that way? Is she not? And then it was just so like, whoa, like it was a lot to process really quickly. So I think that was done deliberately, but it just, I don't know. I think it like overwhelmed me in a way that I wouldn't have wanted to. So it's like a slight point off, but still like the larger twist of her always having been in on it. I absolutely love that. It totally makes sense, but like, I absolutely loved it.
I liked it. And that was one of the things that I think kind of aged the worst. Cause like not necessarily aged the worst, but like I just felt like an appropriate area to bring this up. It feels very, it should have been obvious to them more so to us that Kate was in on from behind. Once their mind started wiping and they couldn't remember everything. Like you have someone who can control your mind, right within your inner circle, an arm's reach away, like literally, right? But then they're saying like, oh no, it's this doctor who we don't know, who may be wiping our minds again. You know, like it would make sense that she was there, right? I don't know. But
this is where I will agree with you a little bit on that, is this is a little bit on Andre. Like he knows that Kate was going behind Golden Boy's back. So as much as she cared about him, there's a level of disloyalty already on her end. Mm-hmm. So maybe he should have known, but everybody else, like other than like, yeah, she can manipulate you. They had no reason to think, oh, he's trying to screw Golden Boy over or whatever.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Yeah. No, Andre. But Andre, good point on that.
This is where, again, like Andre, you know,
that's good. That's a good point there. We mentioned the kids who don't swear well. And the overuse of swearing. This is my biggest problem here. Tell me if I'm like way off base, but the women's powers, and you might answer this. You might have already kind of answered this in a way with saying like the power sets are weird in the boys in general with the Blarney cock there and everything.
But,
Marie gets her superpower after a period. Again, kind of lacking subtlety there for the message that you're trying to send. But her powers is that she can throw blood, but she has to cut herself every time. Isn't that like, so she's just doing a disease that's very common among women, and that's her superpower? Again, kind of like flipping that on its head, I guess. That feels kind of lame to me.
Well, it feels
also,
real.
Also, how does she know? I mean, she has to cut herself every time. What's real about that?
I mean, just superpower. I mean, what's real about it is she has to like hurt herself constantly to be able to like, it's like a, like, this is a weird power, and the only way she can do it is this weird thing that she has to do. But yeah, we're talking about the origin of it.
Yeah. I don't have the I can't buy that. You know, that doesn't work for me. You know what I mean? The suspension of disbelief. That's what I was looking for there. I don't have the suspension of disbelief to try to like to go along with that. But then also, like, doesn't she run out of blood? She's throwing around blood left and right, and she's just like, I'm good.
Point. That's like, a fair point.
Apparently doesn't get anemic or anything like that, or like, or low iron or anything. I don't know. But also on that same topic, Emma becomes small, but only when she's bulimic. So she has to throw up every time.
Well, until the last episode, we find out that she may have a workaround finally.
Very weird. Yeah. She has to cry or something. Is it like just expelling fluids from her body that makes her?
It might be, but then if it's that though, then why can't she just go to the bathroom?
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It should be more emotionally related, but even then, we'll see. Like, I don't know.
So like all the women's powers. So when you talk about Marie, when you talk about Emma, when you talk about Jordan Lee, is basically just a trans person who is strong and quick, you know, like that's essentially what her power is. And it's just, again, not being very subtle there with what you're saying along, but all these, they have, it's very weird power for the women. And then the guys just are like a flamethrower or a Magneto or invisible. You know what I mean? They have like kind of like understood kind of like regular powers within the superhero world. And then just the women just have a really tough time with it. I don't really get that choice, but that seems very weird to me, especially like, it's hard to take Marie seriously when every time she goes to fight, she's got a knife to her hand ready to cut herself. Don't make me do it. I'll cut myself. It's tough. It's a very tough thing to watch unfold and take seriously.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably another social commentary in there. And because that's like, Garth Ennis is all about satire and social commentary. So like, there's probably a reason why, because these, I don't think, I don't know about Golden Boy, but I don't think any of these characters exist in The Boys. Like, this is based off of a run, but it's like they made a lot of different changes in there. So, but obviously he's involved in all this, and we'll get into that a little bit more a little later. But I think that that's always like, that's always something that's at the forefront and deliberately heavily sometimes in The Boys. So that's probably what's going on there.
Yeah. Again, I just, it seemed very superficial, all of that there. It's like, you're not really thinking too much about what the message that they're trying to send here is, but not crazy on a different note, not crazy about the nickname God You. Doesn't do it for me. I don't know. A little blasphemous, if you ask me.
I'm not surprised by that one.
Disney Plus and MCU television. That's good. I think what's aging the worst here. I think they look at these shows and going to be like, what, why can't we do this? And I think me as a fan of both look at it, I'm like, why can't they do this? And I'm not even talking about to the degree of, the violence or again, like the making it R-rated essentially, but just storytelling that's not necessarily on the nose, but like women cutting themselves and stuff like that. But you know, everything else they should be adopting into the MCU Disney Plus television scheme.
I think that with this change, I think Echo could be the start of like of that change, not because of Echo specifically, but because of like this Marvel spotlight thing that they want to do. And maybe that they let an Echo, they're letting that show be what it's supposed to be. Just based, and again, that's just based off the trailer and that one decision that they've made about Marvel Spotlight. That's
what
that's
what's the show supposed to be?
Something darker and grittier.
Oh, okay.
That's all I mean. Yes, and okay. Where like you're able to go into direction, go into areas that maybe they weren't previously going into. Like, what's the edgiest show that they've had so far? Probably like to some extent. Falcon and the Winter Soldier because of U.S. Agent, or maybe Moon Knight because of like taking on the whole DOD, like that's it, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
but then you look at Marvel Netflix, and those are more. Those are the closest things I think you get from like Disney-ish Marvel type stuff. The closest thing to The Boys that you get.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And that that's not really good, you know, in comparison.
That's where we again disagree very much so, but yes.
Well, you liked Moon Knight, but did you care for
Okay. Wait, no, I liked that show, yes, but I thought you were talking about Marvel Netflix because we do disagree on that one.
Oh yeah, we do.
That's what we're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just about it. Right? I feel like we should have known that Kate was in on it from the get-go. We covered that.
Yeah, I think Andre is the only person that should have been able to put that together. He's the only person. But again, love is blind and whatever.
Yeah, that's right. He was trapped by the pussy. Power of the pussy there. That'll get you. Who had the best performance by a side character?
So I know you have Shetty jotted down here, and this is where we always get into stuff because of like side characters. She I think she is like she's a reoccurring side character. That's the only thing. So she definitely is the number one here for me because again, you take her as this sympathetic character who's kind of being attacked on multiple fronts, but then you find out she's a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. But then you kind of understand where she's coming from in all this. And again, like this is where I think when you blur the lines, and that's what this show does so well, she's outstanding. I think she's a very well-written character and very well, the performance is outstanding too. But then I think when you talk about like a bit character, someone who just kind of shows up and is gone or not around as often, Tech Knight, I thought was outstanding. He was a character when I vaguely remember hearing him being announced to be involved in this this series. He is such a bizarre character in the comics, like one who you know, you see a little bit here and there. But yeah, he's got the weird thing he's got going on in this show is what you see in the comics, but I love the spin of him having his own TV show and everything.
I knew when he picked up that bagel and he just kind of looked at it longingly. I was like, he's going to fuck that bagel. it just hit me. I was like, oh, okay. And then it came out that he's just doing it to everything too. So that was pretty funny. It's funny. He's so like well-to-do and like well-kept and everything, you know, like you would think that like, he's like very buttoned up. So it's nice to know that he's
such an asshole,
fucking anything with a hole in it. Right. But yeah, so I think Shetty's on there and for a reoccurring side character, I think she's up on the top. I liked her again. She was like, conniving and planning, but still like soft and warm and kind of like had this like motherly kind of vibe to her when she needed to. So she kind of was able to kind of play the chameleon role to please whoever was in front of her at the moment, which I thought was kind of good. Yeah. So I love Soldier Boy's appearance. I thought that was great. And again, right in the dream about, you know, humping the pillow, and then he's going back and forth with Andre about, you know, who really likes or who Kate really wants. So I think that was really funny. But the invisible RA is the guy who I like there. Maverick, I think his name is. Very funny. I love when he goes into the fighting mode, right? He's like, okay, he gets possessed by Kate and he takes the hat and the glasses off and suddenly he's fully invisible. Weird ongoing thing with like him and like a llama that he's sleeping with. That's kind of weird, but I think that's a funny little bit there. But yeah, good stuff. Good stuff from the invisible RA. And also, I didn't like him at first. Social media Jeff grew on me towards the end there. Shout out social media Jeff.
My cover's blown.
Who was like a double agent or something.
Yeah.
Like he was up to something.
Yes, he was. Yes. Yeah. So they do a really good job of just like little things sprinkling them in here and there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Who lost the show?
Polarity. Like the actual Polarity. Andre's dad. I mean, he looks bad on multiple different fronts, to just not the best dad in the world. Doesn't seem like, as much as he wants what's best for his son, he just also is, you know.
No, he's like a hockey dad. He's just like living vicariously through his son and like getting kicked out of hockey rinks.
Hockey is what you pick first, huh?
Yeah. I think hockey parents are the worst.
Interesting. I don't know which one I would necessarily.
Lacrosse is a close second.
Really?
I didn't know that. Because a lot of those, they're cut from the same cloth, the hockey parents and lacrosse parents, you know?
I
probably
like
come from, you know, they come from money or made some money. They're probably high ranking workers in their job, you know, where they don't have to take a lot of answers. And then this is something that's finally out of their control and they're doing their best to put control onto a situation that they don't have control over.
I think that's fair enough.
That's painting with a very wide brush, but I think it works.
No, but there's definitely like a saying, like, or like those are not the sports that I would have thought of, but like, then again, I don't know which sports I would have thought of, because I know I've heard that kind of shit before. Maybe it is hockey parents. I just forget. But anyways, sorry, I digress. I'm getting caught up in.
Yeah. He's a hockey dad to me there, but I hear. And is he dead? Do we know, or is he?
We
just
don't know. He's still in the hospital, as far as we know.
I do like that actor though. It's like Sean Patrick Thomas or something like that is his name.
Oh, he does a great job. He does a great job in his role. It's not about
Forrester.
It's about Polarity.
No, yeah, the Polarity, was not there. For me, I think the big loser is the production team for hiring the wrong Schwarzenegger as the Golden Boy. So it was Patrick Schwarzenegger, who was the legitimate son of Arnold Schwarzenegger. But this guy that I have linked there, hyperlinked, is the bastard son, but looks just like Arnold. So he's like Jon Snow, the prince who was promised, discarded by his family, not recognized. Well, you know, Arnold recognized him and everything, but he's not a part of the family. He lives with his mother. And he looks just like him. Well, Patrick Schwarzenegger's a little scrawny little twink. Like, you're going to have Golden Boy on there. Like, don't have like a little teenager playing him. You know, you get someone who actually has got some muscle, who's got some Golden Boy to him, you know? Didn't really look like a Golden Boy to me. I was kind of shocked when it was like, this is the guy that they think is like the strongest hero out there.
Sometimes it's not about how you look on the outside, but everything that's on
the outside. That's what I mean. I think in this situation, if he's going to be Golden Boy, he should look the part. You know, he should be jacked and he should be like the pinnacle of the man.
I guess I thought like, oh, this is he ended up being like a nice guy in the show. Obviously.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Shit. But I was like, oh yeah, this would be the Golden Boy kind of guy. Like he's just good looking enough. And like, yeah, he's got like fitted to me, but
maybe like from the sense, like the pretty boy thing, like I get that. And it's, but like, he's kind of like the Human Torch, but he's strong. Like they use him like he's fighting with strength instead of like quickness and using his flame on stuff, you know? So like, I think the way that they portrayed him, like they should have just used his body type more to shape his strengths, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for shaping strengths, but I think when you have him be kind of smart and you go and make him too jacked, like this, because when I saw the picture of this guy, he's like, he looks like,
no, he's like Arnold.
Like Arnold jacked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not, you know, it's maybe not fair.
Oh, so now you're judging someone based on their looks. They're saying all muscle heads are dumb. Is that what you're saying, Nick?
Yes, that's absolutely what I'm saying.
I knew it. You're just completely against muscle heads.
Yes.
I knew it. You heard it first here, guys.
Oh my goodness.
Who maybe Nick's the big loser of this episode. Who knows? Who won the show?
I am every time. I think that Maddie Phillips, who plays Kate, and Jazz Sinclair, who plays Maria, I think they're big winners in this show because I do think their characters are going to have their characters could do well beyond this. Especially the way things end is just such a mind fuck. So I'm very invested in those two characters. I think in general, this is like a great, I don't know any other work that they've done. So maybe they've done some other prominent work, but it feels like a pretty good coming out party for them. But the big winner for me, I think, is Eric Kripke to make good on the tease that I talked about earlier. Like his ability to morph or modify Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson's work from what they did in the comics, because that's the writer and the artist for this series. He does such an outstanding job. So this is based on the We Gotta Go arc. And for those who maybe want to try and read what this is based off of, it's in the second omnibus from The Boys. There are six of those. And that is actually in that story. We actually have The Boys in the mix, and we don't have these characters, but Godolkin, his whole situation is actually much more X-Men like, very, very on the nose X-Men like. And Godolkin is actually there. Like, he is actually a person. He's supposed to be like a Charles Xavier. And there's a lot of weird messed up shit going on there. Not this kind of stuff, but different. But a lot of like the outrageousness that takes place here, like the whole llama thing with the invisible RA, that's like a tiny bit of what you get in the comic book run. So it's not the same thing, but I love how they took it, modified it, made it fit for a larger audience, and then also made it fit for these times. And just Kripke, and I know there are other people who are writing this particular series, but obviously he's the one that's doing all the boys stuff as well. He's doing an outstanding job with this stuff, man.
I like it. I'm glad you had an in-depth answer here, because I did not for this. Because no one really jumped out as an individual winner of the show for me. Maybe just the show as a whole. Like I enjoyed the show. I thought it was cool. I think they do a lot of things. They zag a lot of things where Marvel and DC zigs, and I think that's refreshing in this space. So I'm appreciative of that. I think maybe if I were to choose a winner, maybe it's Marie. Just, you know, main character, she comes out as kind of like the leader of the group by the end of this year. She also took a blast from Homelander.
Mm.
Do we know, has anyone survived from that? Or does he do like, can he have varying degrees of strength coming out of his eyes?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, but I'll tell you what. She's definitely in conversation for loser, too, because of the way this whole thing wraps up. Her, Andre, Emma, and Jordan, they would screw over in the worst way.
That's true. That's a good point there. Yeah, and we'll see. You know, I think how it ends there. You know, you get Sam. We get the what is it? What's the show called? That's like Tucker Carlson, Fox News there. But they have that kind of breaking news at the end there, and they spin everything around to say that they were the shooter, the killers. And then you get it's Sam and Kate there as the heroes, it's right?
Outrageous. So I actually have one final question before we wrap this up. Do you think there should be a Gen V season 2 with these characters, or should all of this just flow right into The Boys and just stick with that going forward?
Yeah, that's interesting. I would like to see where season 4 of The Boys, is that what that is?
Right.
The fourth
right,
season
yeah.
of The Boys? I would like to see that where they take, you know, they pick things up. And what I've seen, I think this is right there, that it picks up fairly quickly after Gen V, like almost immediately. So, you know, I think that leaves a good opportunity to bring in some of the cast from Gen V into The Boys, kind of refreshing that, get some familiar faces in there too, and then kind of see where it goes. And I think you know, if you have kind of one big show or two big shows that you can kind of go one on one off with and have different characters come into the fold there, I think that works again from like a refreshing standpoint. You're not getting too stale.
Gotcha. I think it could
did
be...
I answer that question? I don't know.
No, you didn't think you did.
Around it.
Well, but I mean, like, that's an answer still. Like, I think that it's, I think that I feel of a similar mind to you. Like, I tend to think just bring it all in to the Boys and just go forward from there. But at the same time, there is room to bring this back for a season two, depending on what they had of their vision was for the Boys. Maybe this is gonna, like, yeah, it picks up right afterwards, but maybe they don't want to get into this too much necessarily, especially if they, like, if numbers come back, you know, from streaming and it's like, oh, I'm sure they already have everything written, but if they had the ability to look at the streaming numbers and it's like, mm-hmm. not a lot of people are watching Gen V, then it's like, okay, maybe we got to figure out a way to pivot out of this correctly, and we can't just go right into the next thing.
Yeah. But, yeah. It, you know, one thing, if I could circle back to one thing about what aged the best, I love the social media rankings. This kind of goes into like the Hunger Games aspect that I was talking about before. Mm-hmm. And when they're discussing the rankings, like among the board members about who to choose, I thought that was a very interesting thing. I envision that what Hollywood studios look like, you know, like Hollywood execs are like, no, this guy's trending on Twitter. This girl is killing it in this age group. So we got to bring them in for this role here, and not even necessarily worrying about, you know, acting ability or any sort of like, you know, actual skills. They're like, no, this person is the it person right now.
I wouldn't be stunned if that's directly what this is all based on, because it's like, it feels, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's very well done.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's Gen V, now streaming on Amazon Prime there. Nick gave it a 92. I gave it an 81. That gives it about an 85 and a half.
86 on the nose.
86, wow. I was close to it. I was right around it, too. So 86, really solid. Go check it out. 8 episodes, Amazon Prime. But right now, you got to get your tickets because the train is leaving the station. It
choo-choo, bitches.
How'd you end spooky season, Nick? Lay it on me.
Went in with a couple of softer ones and Constantine and Hocus Pocus. I love Constantine. Everybody knows that. As much as I love the movie, he's definitely not the best interpretation of the character, but still fun.
You get, though, right, with that character.
Exactly.
Right?
But when it comes to like more Constantine, I would prefer we don't get Keanu, but if that's the only way we're going to get more Constantine, I will take it.
Okay. All right.
Hocus Pocus, obviously a classic. And then Sinister, which is, I'm blanking on Ethan Hawke, which is, according to this like website that Lauren had found, this is like a list of all the scariest movies of all time. It takes in a lot of different factors. And Sinister is apparently like top 10. And it was definitely freaky. I don't know if it's the scariest thing we watched, but it's definitely pretty friggin' scary. That's for damn sure.
Okay. All right.
Also, Invincible is back. Season 2 of that. Mm-hmm. Watch the first episode. I mean, this show is friggin' outstanding. It picks up where it left off in a lot of different ways. More importantly, in terms of quality. I binge the shit out of Vox Machina, which is this high fantasy animated show over on Amazon Prime. Absolutely loved it. It was recommended to me by a listener of TLDR who I actually forgot to grab his handle from Twitter, but I'll make sure I mention it on TLDR. But I absolutely loved that show. Thank you for pushing me to watch that. And then catching up on Harley Quinn as well. Like I said, I had a lot of stuff that I was putting off during the spooky season. And Harley, this is probably the best season of the Harley Quinn show. I think it's season 4 over on Max, not HBO Max.
All right. So getting up there, 4 seasons of Harley Quinn. Good for her.
Yeah, it's such an easy show to just pop on to, because it's only 20 minutes, you know, 25 minutes at a time. So like, we'll go and be like, oh, do you want to watch a movie? Yeah, but do you want to watch a Harley Quinn episode first? Yeah, sure, of course. So
now I've been meaning to do that with Rick and Morty. I think it's season 7 that's out right now, and I just have not been able to haven't worked myself up to it. I have watched Tropic Thunder a couple of times. I do enjoy that. Do recommend that. I think that's on Hulu. But you know, I'll rewatch that. I'll do, you know, 30 Rock, It's Always Sunny. I'll rewatch all those episodes, but you know, I can't commit to watching a new show for some reason. It's tough to get me into it.
I mean, there's just so much friggin' shit out there.
There's so much stuff out there, and I gotta winterize the backyard. You know, I gotta rake leaves. I gotta clean the gutters out. There's stuff to be done.
A lot of teddy bear things to do.
A lot of teddy bear things. I'm not sure what that means, but
Ted reference. He says it at some point in the first movie where he's like, how he said he can't have a job because he has it's a lot of teddy bear things to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I got some teddy bear things to do there. Yeah, I made a compost tumbler. I thought that was kind of fun. So I got a little compost tumbler, take a 55-gallon barrel, hollow it out, make a nice frame for it.
Oh, wow.
Stick a rod through there and spin it around. You get nice compost. Nice nutrient-rich soil for the springtime. So got that all set up. Yeah, we're doing some things out there.
Jeez, yeah, I'd say so. You've really stepped it up, and you're really trying to cram it all in.
Yeah, well, we got the garden beds. You know, I got another 55-gallon barrel for rainwater storage, which I'll start in the springtime. Mm. So I get that going, get some nice rainwater to water the plants, vegetables, all that good stuff. So yeah, we're moving right along here over at Casa de Sykes.
Yeah, getting ready, working on that homestead life. That's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, self-sufficiency is a nice quality to have.
Yes. No.
What you won't hear me explaining is the trench that I'm digging out for my underground tunnel, my bunker. So you know, when the apocalypse comes, you know, then I'll be ready. I'm not talking about that. You don't know where that is.
Okay.
When you said it's a secret, you don't know that.
I was thinking of when you said trench, I was thinking like moat kind of situation. Like
yeah, I misspoke there. I was saying that to get to underground bunker. And I was hoping that just kind of like hop, skip, and a jump there, but not exactly.
My bad. I can't help you out. Fucking hate.
Yeah, well. All right, let's figure this out here. So, do we want to do Loki or do you want to do the Marvels next week? Because yeah, they're both ending, so we're gonna have to put one off.
Do you have? I don't have a lean either way. Do you?
It doesn't matter to me. I got one episode left of Loki anyway, so that's the one show I've been consistent to watch.
Why don't we make it Loki to give us a little bit of wiggle room because that's easier to access for both of us.
That's nice, and then we'll be able to. Be a part of that second weekend for the Marvels, and maybe we don't contribute to that second week drop off that some of the other Marvel movies faced.
Look at that! Look at you.
We're thinking ahead.
Unbelievable! It's man of the people or man of the studios, I guess.
Yeah, well, man of the podcast waves. You know, we're just punching in and out of the podcast factory, just putting out work for you guys. Same bat time, same bat place as always, friends.